Night Owl, Kitty Kitty, and Stupid. I wound up covering it for the Soho Weekly News, taking over Danny's column as he's away somewhere. I titled it Libertine Rock. Lonely Wednesday. Ork and Lloyd just dropped in, bearing Heinekens and grass, made themselves at home, asked to hear some obscure English platters. So I flipped on Eno's Seven Deadly Fins, which removed the caps from our teeth. Then Brian Ferry's sensational cover of The In Crowd. They looked through my sketchbooks as Terry told outrageous stories about his old pal Nick Ray. He talks about Billy Hallop, the cute dead-end kid who went wrong. We talked about how persistence pays off. Ork kids me about never wearing the same outfit twice. February 6, 1975. I don't have the rent money. Gulp. Here I sit, presiding over all the appliances. The drapes are closed. I don't answer the phone. I'm trying an experiment in being alone. I like it. I ain't been to school all week, except once to draw a gypsy, which I made into an Egyptian. I took sanctuary in a nearby cinema. Spending time with the ever-fascinating David Walter McDermott, a high-idealed lunatic. He did a thing at art school where he was the man who forgot to put on his trousers and walked to school through the Syracuse slum with his knee-high socks, garters, brogues, boxers, etc., everything but the pants. When this was pointed out in drawing class, he shrieked and ran home. Went to a big party last night in a phantasmagorical pleasure palace on West 20th Street. There was a leopard lounge that put my crummy boudoir to shame. Barbara Nessum's on the wall. She used to be Mark Bolan's lover. Norman held out white cocaine for everyone to sniff. Someone flashed a tit. Richie Gallo flashed a cock. A neon light sculpture put an electric dawn on the shattered guests. Bowie hid under his enormous black hat. Thought of his song Watch That Man that goes, shaky through a party that lasted all night. Everybody drank a lot of something nice. A tiny Japanese television set was perched on top of a Greek column. Modern art. Mary Jane is mad at me because there was another drunken night where Craig Golson passed out and threw up in his sleep, and she found me kissing his pretty girlfriend, Susan Morris, who works at The New Yorker. I also had my hand under her white silk blouse, playing with her exquisite breasts. Mary Jane took me by the wrist and dragged me away. Bad dog. Woof woof. Bow wow. If I admit I'm an alky, then I gotta quit, and who wants to? My hangover sometimes lasts for 3 days now. I'm 22, my liver must be 60 by this point. Got a pain in my armpit. Is that the big hello of coronary thrombosis? Emphysema? My cold bones clatter against each other. February 16th, 1975. Big blizzard hits Manhattan. I bundle up, put a hat low over my eyes, and head south, past Prince, Spring, and Broome. No cars, no people. Just me in snowbound Soho smoking a joint. I felt as if in a dream, the white flurries whipping at the industrial warehouses. At Canal, I ducked into the red and white pearl paint. I got mesmerized by all the colors. I wanted to get everything. I spent $60 on materials. An investment in myself. I flirted with the sales girl. I'd seen her somewhere before, very arty. Got a couple of beers at Finelli's on my way home. Trudging through the deep snow, Manhattan seems benign in the whiteout, a fairyland. Couldn't hurt a fly. Our lease is up in April. I'm tired of the cranky neighbors who make their threats about the noise. We have to tiptoe on the slanted floor at night. the 25,000 cockroaches, the toilet that runs constantly, the stuck drain in the tub, shower don't work, hot is cold and cold is hot. I'd like a proper bathroom. I can't sit up in my loft bed. 10 electrical cords stuck into one jack. That's what's called an octopus. The surly bums in the corner calling me faggot. Maybe I'll move in with beautiful Mary Jane. Interview Valentine's party. I found a note in my pocket that said, "Call Ron for Bernstein party," and a number. I called. Art dealer Andrew Crispo answered and asked if I was Duncan Hanna. "Yeah, have we met?" I asked. He explained that he and Ron had met me at a Larry Rivers party, and they very much wanted me to come to this one. Okay. First, an opening at the New School, curated by J.C. Suarez, of David Levine, Ed Sorrell, Brad Holland, and Ralph Steadman. Suarez ogled Mary Jane and said with a leer, "You're not leaving her behind, are you?" "Nope, she's coming with me." We hightailed it to Gary Lajewski's Tower Gallery at 7 p.m., just as a junked-out Genevieve Waite was leaving. Her Broadway show closed after two performances. Richard Bernstein was showing his iconic airbrushed photos of celebrities. He looked like a Jewish David Essex. Many factory people were inside, loud and macos, getting in everyone's photos, fat Pat Ast, slick Fred Hughes, sexy Hiram Keller, shy Andy Warhol, and theatrical Diana Vreeland. Crazy Tinkerbell, grotesque Divine, winning David Joe, run-down Lee Childers, who I haven't seen since Club 82, the sperm cellar, as Lee called it, turned into a black club. Dotson Rader asked Lance what my status was. Lance said I was taken. Dotson said, "Too bad, because he's the most beautiful boy on earth. And because of my profession, I would have to turn to men eventually." He warned Mary Jane not to let me drink too much, or else he would be taking me home. A bit presumptuous, but then he sees humanity as hustlers. Got a ride in Peter Brown's station wagon to the after party on 76th Street. I'm exhausted from a full day of booze and no food. Never been good at pacing myself. Entered a big apartment where there was a huge block of ice carved in the shape of a heart, lit by pink fluorescent tubes, melting very slowly. Had my photo taken with Fred Hughes, Tony Zanetta, Lance, Wayne. I sat down only to discover that I was unable to get back up. Transsexual Amanda Lear sidled over and asked why I was so drunk in her crazy German accent. "Just am," I explained. She scolded me for a while with a big smile, lots of white teeth in there, then started joking about her jealous boyfriend, Brian Ferry. She was wearing a sheer chiffon blouse that exposed her shapely silicone breasts, which I'd already seen in Louis magazine, being a guy who does his homework. She said she was recruiting models for Salvador Dali. He's painting angels. And to give her my number so she could get in touch about that, I did. Whew, time to go. Drinks with Dali. Rainy Sunday night, Reno Sweeney, Anita O'Day on stage, singing some junky scat. At the table next to us were Colicello, Warhol, Keller, and Amanda Lear. She was telling them how disgustingly drunk I was the other night. Andy turned to me and said, "Oh, I always thought you were British." They left without finishing their drinks. Never understood how anyone could do that. It's the Scotsman in me. The following afternoon she called, told me to meet her at 5:30 in the St. Regis for drinks with Dali. I took the subway up. In the lobby was a young man slumped into a Louis XVI chair, wearing a raccoon coat emerald green suit, snappy shoes, and a ruffled shirt. A misfit like me, I thought. He looked up and gave me a smile. I smirked back. It was Rod Stewart. Amanda entered the lobby, took me by the hand, and led me to Dolly's table in the crowded King Cole bar. She started telling me her life story. Super narcissistic. She's about 35. She didn't pause for a breath, looking around to see the effect she was having on the businessmen in the room. You're just like Brian. Your innocence and shyness is just a mask, she said, wagging a finger at me as if I was a secret degenerate. Then there was a silence. We looked to the doorway, and there, arms spread wide, sporting a gold cape, was Dali. He announced to the room loudly, Dali is here. He headed towards us, his cane propped in front of him like a sword. Amanda stood up and he kissed her hand, and they began babbling in a mix of Spanish, French, and English. I noticed his cape had real bees sewn into the weave. It was all there, the ridiculous mustache, the bulging eyes, filled with cataracts by this stage of his life, the long, greasy hair. I stood to shake his hand. He sized me up, appeared satisfied. Will you model for Dali? He said. Yeah, sure. But wait. Do you have hair on your chest? He said fiercely. No, I don't. Ah, this is good. Dali does not paint angels with hair in their chest. Then he considered another point. But are you a professional model? No, I'm not. Ah, this is also good. Dali does not paint professional models. But then, what is it that you do? I'm an art student, I said meekly. Dali threw his hand over his heart and said, Ah, then you love Dali. Taken aback by this lunatic, I answered, Oh, yeah, we're all crazy about you down at art school. A total lie. We all think he's the worst. He said he was glad I was skinny and pale and European-looking. You will make a beautiful angel for Dali. And with that, he made his grand exit, while the dumbfounded businessmen looked on. Amanda took me upstairs to her dark room. The Dali entourage lives in the St. Regis when they're in town. She showed me her portfolio and her song lyrics. She took a Polaroid of me. I felt like a 10-year-old. I was completely thrown off by this exotic creature with the inside-out dick. I don't want to find out more. She began to change for her next engagement, shooting me naughty looks. Should I wear this or this? Uh-oh. The phone rang. It was Brian Ferry on tour in Toronto. She was teasing him about the nice boy she had in her room. I could hear him getting upset. What boy? Why is there a boy in your room? She was laughing at him, saying not to be jealous. He's just waiting for me as I dress for dinner. He's just a pretty boy. Ha ha. More squawking from the receiver. Amanda, enjoying this immensely, tormenting him like a cat with a mouse. I felt sorry for Brian, my hero. He's jealous of me. Fortunately, she had a dinner to get to, so I was spared any further spider and fly scenario. I was walking home on Park Avenue, ruminating on sexual identity and thinking about what I would order at Bun and Burger when John Barrett sidled up and took me somewhere fancy instead for cold trout, duck a l'orange, and creme caramel. Nothing like a free feed bag. He was amused by my story and asked, What does turn me on, anyway? Roxy Music at the Academy of Music. First, splashed out on dinner at Lu Chow's, which has been there for a few hundred years, with the same waiters, too. Schnitzel and spotzel all around. The academy was buzzing with Roxy types in the lobby. All of my friends were there. Ferry was menacing, squinty-eyed, twisting away, in good voice, icy charm. Andy Mackay doing the duck walk in his green jumpsuit. Futuristic 50s. Triumphant headliners delivered the goods. Doesn't get any better than this. Afterwards, Mary Jane and I stood by the stage door, waiting for the man of the hour. He and Amanda appeared. Flashbulbs went off and they ducked into a big black limousine, roaring off to the El Morocco Club. We walked south, past the giant Cooper Union building, past the colonnades, which houses the new hotspot, Lady Astor's, to CBGB, where the mumps were opening for television. Blondie and the Ramones looked on from the wings. There's definitely warring cliques in CBs, now that the audience has grown and bands are getting signed to labels. Some of the innocence is lost. March 1st. The phone company burned down, so I am incommunicado. When it was turned back on, my first call was from Amanda Lear.
Hello, darling. Do you want to come up and play with Amanda?
I can't. I've got homework. It's a school night.
Don't be ridiculous. You have to come up. The Legend of Lila Clare is on. It's my favorite. I want to watch it with you. Don't you adore Kim Novak?
Sorry. I'd like to, but I can't. Then she blew up at me. Told me that the dolly modeling was off and that I should learn to grow up. Slam! So that's that. Bye, weirdo. Never believe what an artist says, only what he does. Teachers tell me to pick one idea and stick to it. Then start on a series of variations on a theme. Do it over and over. Then the viewer knows you really meant it. I don't do that. Too many ideas swimming about in my head. As old Whitman said, I contain multitudes. The cracks in my head let more and more come in. I do research in the library, studying the last 20 years in the art magazines, receptive to this, discarding that. Takes a long time to hone your sensibilities. Each new wonder leads me deeper into the wilderness. The more you know, the more you realize how much more there is to know. It's a lifetime profession, an endless process. I got my hair cut at Mingus, and Mary Jane dyed it L'Oreal Blue Black. I'm moving up to her pad in Chelsea, a nice quiet block. So I'll be bidding farewell to Little Italy. I'll be a college graduate then, and we'll have to seek some kind of employment. Groan. I was in a local art gallery, and I spied with my little eye, owl-eyed and bleach-blonde David Hockney. He was with his best pal from the Met, bearded Henry Geldzahler. I eavesdropped on their conversation. I passed him and said, "Hello." Hockney paused, gave me a crooked grin, and said, "Hi." So much to ask him, so much to tell him, that I remained mute. I watched as Hockney and Geldzahler went across West Broadway. Henry posed in front of a Grand Union, and David took pictures of him. "Pop!" Henry poked David in the ribs and pointed at me, caught gaping, blush. Someday I'll be his peer, I hope. It's a drag being a fan, that unequal footing feeling. Went up to the Hippodrome to see the New York Dolls, now that Londoner Malcolm McLaren has got a hold of them. I've seen him hanging around CBGB in a sharp powder blue teddy boy suit. He dressed them up in red patent leather and hung some kind of Soviet banner behind them. Old wine and new bottles. Or is it the other way around? Anyhow, three of the five dolls have pretty heavy smack habits. Not good. I went out drinking with Richard Lloyd and tottered home at 2:30 a.m. crawled up into my loft bed and found a grumpy Mary Jane asleep there. In the morning, she explained why she was grumpy. "I went to bed about 11. Your friend John Barrett started buzzing from downstairs very late, demanding to be let in. And I kept telling him you weren't here. He wouldn't take no for an answer, so I gave in and buzzed the door. He arrived with this creepy-looking English guy with a very round head. They were both extremely drunk and demanded to know where you were, as if I know. Who's the other guy? How should I know? Just some riffraff Barrett had in tow. He was very rude. It was horrible." She went off to school in a huff. Then Barrett called. "You really blew it last night." "What did I do?" "You know who I was with last night? Francis Bacon."
"What?"
"Yep. I went to his opening at the Met. We were introduced, and we were getting along, drinking champagne, and he said, 'Let's get out of here and have some fun.' So we went to a bar I know, and he said, 'Don't you know any attractive, dissolute young painters?' So I said, 'Just one, but he'd be perfect. He's in the village. Let's go find him.' We found your unfriendly girlfriend instead."
"Where were you?"
"Out drinking with a pal. How was I supposed to know you were going to show up with Francis Bacon?"
"Well, you blew it."
"He was a scream. That guy can drink like no one you ever seen. Called you a cunt."
"Chance in a lifetime."
Then he rang off. How weird to think of Bacon standing in my slum kitchen. Well, maybe not, considering. It's spring. The girls are flying low. I'm a poor stray cat, and the world is my saucer of milk. I walk into Washington Square Park, stomping grounds of the Beat Generation 25 years ago, now populated by troubled nutcases raving with anguish. Met my new pal Craig, and we went up to the Met for the Bacon show. I liked his small self-portraits the best, but mostly find him tricky and pompous, with those big gold frames and decorator colors. I liked the myth, though. Down to Knoedler for the Hockney drawings. The colored pencil drawings of his friends are gorgeous, and those spidery rapidograph drawings as well. That guy can draw like a motherfucker. Then on to Antonioni's new film, a beautifully existential vacuum with the very delectable Maria Schneider. The Passenger was marred by the casting of Jack Nicholson, who's a creepy ham and far too American. What about Jean-Louis Trintignant? Wouldn't he have been just right? Television say they've broken up. Verlaine, 26, wants Dupre on piano. Hell wants Dupre on guitar, but he sticks with the mumps out of loyalty. He's a bonhomme. Had a treat in my painting class. The model was the beautiful Annette, who slept with me and Dupre on the same night last summer when it was hot like the jungle. All the boys were going nuts over her reclining nude form on the stand. I painted away on that creamy form that I had carnal knowledge of. Her stomach leading to her thatch. She stared at me the whole time. At the break, she put on her kimono and came over to me, whispering about our past lives and stuff, her huge unblinking eyes never veering from mine. So my fellow classmates and teachers' jaws dropped at my obvious familiarity with the somnambulist goddess. My peer group rating went way up among this oil paint spattered crowd. J.C. Suarez has been telling me to take my portfolio to the Times. I didn't think I was ready. He asked me to bring my collage books to class. He told the class to get to work and told me to follow him. Where are we going? I asked. Just shut up and follow me, he answered. Down 11 flights in the elevator, into an uptown cab, to the New York Times, up to the art department, into Steve Heller's office, op-ed page. Heller says, "Hi, JC, what can I do for you?" "Give this fucker a job." Steve looks through my books and says, "Okay, do you like opera?" "Uh-huh," I lied. "Okay, a horizontal spot, 5 columns wide, on opera, for Friday, at 10 a.m. You can use our picture collection. Let's see, $50 a column. That's $250. "Great," I say. Then, J.C. leads me down the hall to Ruth Ann Sell's office. She's art director for the Sunday magazine. "Hi, J.C., how can I help you today?" "This is Duncan Hanna. I want you to give him a job." She eyed me suspiciously and said, "Let's see what you've got." She flipped through the pages and said, "Okay, I've got a full page on an article about how they're teaching pop culture in colleges, called Pop-Eyed Professors. How's that?" she said. "Good." Another $250. There was a spot that went with it. Another $100. So within the week, I was in the Times twice, with my large-ish rubber stamp signature there for all to see and dispose of the next day in the trash bin. It was a very good start to my new occupation. Diagonals. May Day, 1975. A new cascade of ink. Manhattan, where it is always night, and they keep the lights on just to prove it. Now in 3D. Words carved out of colored electricity. There's a guy in jail who's eaten all the light bulbs. Yesterday, Mary Jane and I were walking north on Fifth Avenue to school. I heard what sounded like a garage band playing Brown Sugar, loud, outside. At 10:30 in the morning, on a weekday? What is this? There was a small crowd in front of the Fifth Avenue Hotel on 10th Street. We were on the east side of the street, looking at the back of a large flatbed truck. That's where the live music was coming from. From under the partition, I could see rolled-up Levi's and Fry boots. I ran around to the front, maybe 4 people deep from the lip of the stage. It was the Stones themselves. They threw a press breakfast party for all the New York City journos inside Feather's restaurant, whose windows faced Fifth. The scribes were reportedly pissed off that the Stones hadn't shown up at their own press party to promote their extensive summer tour, only to have them roll right up in front of them and begin to play. I caught the end of their first number, then they raced into the next. They looked appropriately scruffy, in denim and worn leather, good shag haircuts, mixed lips, etc. Their backdrop was a giant eagle with jet engines, drawn by one of my favorite illustrators, the German Christian Piper. Then the skies broke and the rain came down in earnest. Police cars began to arrive. The truck began to drive slowly off, a gaggle of kids racing behind it. I finally saw the Stones. Been with Mary Jane 10 months now. The air has a different flavor. Still talking as though you could tell each other everything you've ever done or seen or said or thought. Two hearts beat as one. She calls me Lamb. We're playing house in her nice one-bedroom apartment, living in sin. We're on the 4th floor, looking south over green, leafy, urban backyards. Just this side of paradise. I can hear someone typing away, punching out a chattering percussion, like the machine guns in All Quiet on the Western Front. Mary Jane says, "Aren't I like a bowl of rice, all fluffy and flaky?" She grabbed the hem of her dress and pulled it over her head, leaving nothing on but the radio. "Let's get this bed on the road. What's the matter? Have we run out of feathers?" Her mouth is like a pink flower. Time for Betty Bye. Mating on the mattress. New records. Slow Dazzle, John Cale. Let's Stick Together, Brian Ferry. The End, Nico. A Wizard, A True Star, Todd Rundgren. Chet Baker sings. Jack Johnson, Miles Davis. In the Wee Small Hours, Sinatra. Astrid Gilberto. Mickey One, Stan Getz. Metamorphosis, Rolling Stones. Fellini Scores, Nino Rota. New books. Scars in the Soul, Francois Sagan. Astragal, Albertine Sarrazin. Kerouac, Ann Charters. James Dean, The Mutant King, David Dalton. Really the Blues, Mez Mezro. Strangers on a Train, Patricia Highsmith. Tales of Beatnik Glory, Ed Sanders. Call Me Brick, Monroe Howard. The Romance of Lust, Anonymous. The Rachel Papers, Martin Amis. Stranger in Paris, Somerset Maugham. The Postman Always Rings Twice, James M. Cain. French Tales of Love and Passion, Guy de Maupassant. Modigliani, Pierre Sichel. New movies. A Streetcar Named Desire, The Samurai, Flick Story, The Passenger, Just a Gigolo, Chinatown, Farewell My Lovely, Superfly, Swept Away, Caged Heat, Dog Day Afternoon. I read a lot of spy books, hoping that I'll miraculously wake up a secret agent. So, I am no longer a student. I'm a bachelor of the arts. They gave me a gold medal in the graduate show for my piece, Peter Lorre. David McDermott presented a one-man show of my work in his Salon des Arts Société. It was really only the opening, lasting 2 hours. Then the show came down the next day. But he went to a great deal of trouble, which consisted of him framing my collages on Masonite boards that he had wallpapered with a beige and green floral print, also buying me a used tuxedo and having it fitted by an old tailor in Jersey City. He ordered engraved invitations, cases of champagne. He's all about presentation. Don't think he cares for my artworks at all, but he does care about me. I was feeling bad about the expense, feeling beholden to him, so gingerly asked where he was getting the money.
"Have you heard of the Chase Manhattan Bank?"
he asked. "Yes, of course."
"Well, my father is the president."
I was surprised and relieved to hear this. Shortly after, I found this to be completely untrue. David had no father, and he worked as a messenger boy. Eric Emerson was killed by a hit-and-run driver. What a way to go. I shall miss his puckish presence. No more yodeling. No more nothing. Everyone was mourning his passing at the party I went to, at the old factory on the west side of Union Square. Now the factory is on the north side, just above Rizzoli's. Sometimes you can see Andy with his back to the window. Currently inhabited by Viva's husband, Michelle O'Dare, and Anton Perek, who one sees everywhere. This is the place where trigger-happy Valerie Solanas shot Andy. Creepy. They used to shoot laser beams from up here, across the park, into Max's. Someone greets me with, "If it ain't Dixie Dunk, the man with the plan to stick you in the can." Huh? I watch a girl with Edwardian hair and science fiction breasts. I feel the party's force fields, currents of strength, currents of weakness. The love that dare not speak its name just won't shut up these days. Gayness has lost its underground status in NYC and is busy becoming the dominant sensibility. Lots of affectation. Sad when things turn to parody. Kurt has arrived from Minneapolis and is currently crashing on the single bed in the studio/living room. He's singing a little ditty that goes, Transfusion confusion never gonna speed again. Put a gallon in the Allen, shoot the juice to me, Bruce. We have been partaking of alcohol and tobacco. We adopted a female cat named James Bond. She biffs me on the chin. Kurt and I have a new hangout, the 55, just off Sheridan Square. They say the Lion's Head is for riders with drinking problems, and next door at the 55, it's for drinkers with writing problems. Great jazz jukebox. Paul Desmond's Lady in Cement, a particular favorite. Kurt's writing a book, he says, called I Sailed to Tahiti with an All-Girl Crew. Or maybe The Crazy Cunt of a Lazy Wife. He's in the throes of Bukowski worship currently. Kind of shows. Also, Nelson Algren and Tennessee Williams. Saw Melville's Le Samurai last night. Bliss. The confetti-colored signs of Paris that read Orangina, Gelata Molta, D'accord. The gleaming subtitles changing formation. There's our hero, the calm and deliberate contract killer, arm swinging loosely at his side. The wounded wolf of Paris, Alain Delon. He says, I never talk to men holding guns. Who are you? Who cares? Then what do you want? To kill you. Being flaneurs, Kurt and I take a walk without a fixed destination. It was a fine Parisian evening in New York. Gauloise and garlic sat lightly in the air. Cars and people were moving with subdued hysteria. The sky pale as though drained of blood. The young NYU girls wore loose cotton dresses with little makeup and fastened their hair with elastic bands. We head east, where dead motorcars are parked under trees. Yellow doorways were full of painted whores, arguing with working men. One leggy 15-year-old black girl says, Going out tonight, boys? No thanks. Why not? She screams back. I turn to Kurt and say, Kurt, I think she liked you, and you've been complaining of your minimal female companionship this summer. He laughs and says, No scratch for her snatch. People who buy modern paintings are often more interested in gaining admittance to the world of young artists than they are in the piece in question. Confidence is the essential prop. Confidence is alluring. Finding no nucleus with which to cling, we become a small nucleus ourselves. Gradually, we fit our disruptive personalities into the contemporary New York scene. The sun is trying to make me feel guilty about being indoors. I like being indoors. I put rum in my coffee to kill the bugs. The doctor said I should take a drink every 15 minutes, I heard someone say. The city is inevitably linked with Bacchic diversions. I'm caught in the tempo. I'm compelled to live in downtown's disordered mind. Young people wear out early here. Frayed nerves are strewn everywhere. My heart makes a dizzy tour of my chest. I'm riding in a yellow cab between very tall buildings, under a mauve sky. Radios blare in the street. Headlines say, A baby kills a gangster. Image and language cover the city like an enormous comic book. Past billboards, Korean delicatessens, Chinese laundries, green neon florists, and cramped tailor shops. One big whoosh of modern commerce. CBGB with the cool 400. This smelly room teems with cliques, coteries, and circles. Many clones of the Ramones. The Ramones themselves playing pool in the back. Fox terriers in skirts on the make. Look who it is, that waif in a grubby black suit. Black silk shirt. Chopped black hair. Cute as a bug's ear. It's Patty. We talk about Sheila at the bar. She likes anyone with a St. Sebastian complex. She loves martyrs, early deaths. She tells me about how she had to let Mapplethorpe go when his passion for men overrode his love for her. I mean, like, what are you going to do, right? You got to let him go. The jukebox is playing Bowie's We Are the Dead with that great line, I love you in your fuck me pumps. I ask Mary Jane if she wants to go see the new Romer movie. No thanks. I saw one once. It was like watching paint dry. It's true, it's all dialogue. The least visual of the new wave. Speaking of which, I thought I saw Belmondo down by the gay pier. Smoked like him, squinted like him, smiled those huge, sun-baked, wrinkly smiles, picked tobacco off his tongue, but it wasn't him. I knew from Women's Wear Daily that Belmondo was in town, but what would he be doing down at the piers? What would I, for that matter? I went to a party at Larry River's loft, thrown by his son Steve. Nice guy who saw the world in the Navy. Now, he works in TV production. Goes out with one of those Detroit girls. The guests were chattering in the kitchen. They're listening to Motown. This was the scene of the Roxy party 1 year ago. This time I was free to wander around. Half a city block length, given over to Larry's studio, as big as an aircraft hangar. He saved some of his most famous pieces. In the racks I saw Me and My Shadow, Lampman Loves It, Don't Slip, a Gauloise pack, even his nude portrait of Frank O'Hara and construction boots. The Holy Grail. The space was covered with his photos, stencils stapled to the wall, assemblages, constructions, collages, light sculptures, littering the place like he didn't give a shit about them. I'm in awe. Alone in this cathedral. Will I ever have a working situation like this? What a setup. What a funny guy. What a dynamo. I heard through the grapevine that my old acid buddy, Tommy Haskell, got out of the asylum in South Dakota his dad had thrown him into, electroshock therapy, and got hit in the face by the side mirror of a Mack truck 3 days later, while he was stumbling along the side of the road. It's just one thing after another with that guy. One time, he drank a bottle of glue. Can't catch a break. Walking disaster area. He's the first of our gang to bottom out. Why him? Positively 7th Avenue. Mary Jane comes home from work and says, What have you been doing all day, Mr. Smart? I was just reading an eviction notice from the landlord. It seems they didn't care for our last party. We go to dinner at Pete's Tavern on University Place. It says on the wall, Big City of Razzle Dazzle, Little Old Baghdad on the Subway. I assume that's by O. Henry, since this was his watering hole. We assess the 1970s so far. What are they? Conservative? Bored? Stylized? Unstable? Last night I was standing on Bowery and Bleecker talking to Patty. She was wearing an old paisley shirt, her hair glinting blue in the street lamps. She was horsing around like she owned the whole street. Photographs of Eric Lee's marbles and television were slathered on the white exterior wall of CBGB. The dull roar of electric guitars leaks through the doors. David Godless was taking pictures of Patty. She had just rescued a little runt of a black kitten from a murderous dog, and she was holding it up by the scruff of its neck, presenting its tiny white paws. She said, Hey, Duncan, why don't you adopt this little guy? I would, but I already got a couple. He's funny looking. I like him. Which he was. Asymmetrical white blotch on his nose. So I accepted and named him Nick Charles on the spot. Lucky guy moved to Chelsea that night. He was most grateful. Being high, living low, staying young. had a little party for the newlywed Kramers, who have just moved to the city. Mary Jane and I snorted PCP, horse tranquilizer, and in 5 minutes, the world was bathed in a fine emotional haze. I felt like kind of a bright insect. Content with my coma, we took the party out for a nocturnal walk, through narrow winding streets, the buildings leaning in on us, like the cabinet of Dr. Caligari. We were coated with soot and sweat in the sweltering summer heat, listening to the baying hounds of Bohemia. My heart ricochets around my ribcage. August 10th, 1975. Parents are in town staying at the Waldorf. They came over on Saturday morning, carrying bags of fresh groceries from Jefferson Market. That'll help stave off scurvy. Also gave us a warring blender. They like Mary Jane because she's a good girl, a stabilizing influence on me. They like the apartment, the living room, freshly wallpapered in handsome stripes by David McDermott. We had dinner at L'Escargot and a stinger in the Rainbow Room. Dad told brief, precise jokes as only a lawyer can. And then Mom would retell it, only 10 times slower, with lots of slurred stuttering, ruining whatever subtleties there might have been. Dad said he'd had 22 years of trouble from me. He amends that, says I was a good kid, until I had friends who were old enough to drive. I thanked him for taking me on trips to Europe at a young age, 10 and 14. Thanked him for the good schooling. But then, ask for help, I'm broke. Dad emphasized that, one, I'm not a rich kid, and that, two, they're not rich. There's no big inheritance coming to me. So after a lengthy interrogation, Dad decides to bail me out of my financial doldrums until the work starts coming in. A small allowance to cover expenses. For a limited time. He was emphatic about that. An unwilling, though kindly, patron of the arts. Whew. Bloomingdale's incident. Kurt and I go uptown because he needs new horn rims. Bloomies. First we go to the men's room because he's got to lay a cable. He disappeared into a stall, and I stepped up to the porcelain trough. Wedged between two gentlemen. I pulled out my willy and waited for the pee to shoot out the end. I sensed the man next to me wasn't pissing at all. I rolled my eyes to the side and through my dark glasses saw that he had an enormous erection. And he was stroking it slowly with his thumb and forefinger. Skin stretched taut like a sausage. I looked up at his face. He being quite a bit taller. He wasn't staring at me, but at a spot in the middle of the tiled floor. His face was red, his eyes bugged, his teeth clenched, the veins in his forehead clearly outlined. I looked behind me. Leaning against the stalls, maybe the exact same one Kurt was pooping in, was a foreign-looking man, his arms crossed over his brown summer suit. He seemed aware of what was going on. Was he waiting for the wanker to leave? Or was this skit staged in his honor? What a strange little vignette. The wanker stepped backwards and to the side, so that he was even more noticeable. I gave up any thoughts of pissing myself, zipped up, and went over to the sink to wash my hands. I took a final glance at the two of them and left. I waited outside for Kurt, feeling half nauseated, half excited. Kurt appeared. Did you see those guys in there? What guys? I gave him a brief description of the toilet trade drama and urged him to go have a look for himself. He declined. So we went down to the lingerie department to look at the girls. Maybe those two fellas are still up there. I often go over to Columbia dropout Craig Golson's air-conditioned apartment on Horatio Street to read. We actually read together, He wrote a poem about me called The Boy Who Wanted to Go to Paris. We have matching penny loafers, God's most perfect footwear. We also have matching thirsts. He's good about freshening your drink. Craig described Mary Jane as Ophelia. She sleeps a lot. She cries a lot. I give her a lot of guff. She and I go to Times Square to see Farewell, My Lovely, with the great Robert Mitchum as Philip Marlowe. Charlotte Rampling is the sultry sex bomb, shimmering in the technicolor L.A. twilight. Moose Malloy just wants his Velma. Kurt and I traveled up to David McDermott's for a visit. David sang opera for us in his screechy Irish tenor. He served Jack Daniels. We sat amidst the stuffed ducks, squirrels, and other rodents whose glass eyes followed us around. Very Norman Bates. David is gay and lovelorn, thinks he is unattractive, so he sets his sights low. He tried to summon Abraham Lincoln with his time-traveling experiments. Always a surefire seduction ploy. 2 a.m. We took the A train home to West 4th, up the subway steps past Cube Steakhouse, and walked north on 6th Avenue. A large crowd was gathered around O. Henry's. Kurt wondered what was going on. Probably just a murder, I said. We squeezed through the gawkers to the yellow crime scene tape that kept the people back. Several cops were milling around. Two were carrying a covered-up stretcher into the morgue wagon. We saw a gigantic pool of bright crimson being blotted up by an already saturated sheet. We read in the tabloids the next day that a 28-year-old laborer stabbed a transvestite to death after a brief argument. The wounded tranny stumbled across the avenue and crumpled to the sidewalk in front of O. Henry's. This is why they call NYC Fear City. Very Ouija. I go visit Dupre in his fifth-floor Spartan flat on McDougal Street. It's painted ivory. He's got porno playing cards pinned up that say play with me. Dupre says he wants to join the CIA because it's the last frontier. He's just read about the hidden persuaders. He says that the word fuck is subtly inscribed on every Playboy centerfold. Do masturbators really need that suggestion? I thought fuck was rather the point in the first place. He smokes pot and slumps on his couch, looking disheveled in a sweatshirt and thin whale corduroys, eyes hidden by shiny black bangs. Pot doesn't seem to relax anybody anymore, just makes us self-conscious. We're a pretty jumpy crew anyhow. I bite my nails. August 22nd. Now I really went and did it. I turned 23. What a sap! I was reading an article about Warhol in The Voice when Craig came over, blindfolded me, put me in a cab, drove to Lafayette Street, led me upstairs to Lady Astor's. I could recognize the Duke Ellington music. Blindfold ripped off, and there's a crowd singing For He's a Jolly Good Fellow. They laughed at my embarrassment. There was a devil's food cake that said DH-23 on it. There was a gun and a pair of dark glasses, stenciled on the brown frosting. Kurt gave me an expensive book on Egon Schiele's portraits that he stole from the Strand. Mary Jane gave me a beautiful silver ID bracelet that said James Dean on one side and Mary Jane on the other. Craig gave me the new Dean biography by David Dalton. The assembled group gave me a Mr. Coffee machine because I am Mr. Coffee. I was chuffed to see that Shelley's date was Larry Rivers, who wished me a very happy birthday with a big warm smile. My hero! McDermott was dressed in a tailcoat. I felt the love. September 6th. Chelsea domestic scene. Listening to Astrid Gilberto. Kurt's reading Thurber. Nick is high on catnip and laid out on the leopard chair. cat on cat. Nick is featured on the back page of the September issue of the Transoceanic Trouser Press, being held up by Arista recording artist Patti Smith in front of CBGB. Buy this magazine or we'll kill this cat. Nick's got street cred. He is quite literally a Bowery boy. He loves to root through the garbage, just like dem bums do. I love my little kitty. His coat is so warm, and if I never hurt him, he'll do me no harm. That's what cats are made for. That's what cats are paid for. Kurt and I have been drinking in old men's bars, Five Brothers for quarter beers, and Euros on Sixth. One night I was at the 55 with Craig, listening to Coltrane's It Never Entered My Mind on the juke. A guy next to us says, "I couldn't help but overhear what you guys were saying about what friends should be. Let me give you a bit of advice. You can give your best friend anything, your money, your girl, anything but your hat." "Huh? What do you mean?" I asked. "Well, let me tell you a little story. I had this hat once, and my best friend asked to borrow it. He said he was going off to England, and he was really going to need my hat. Told me not to worry. He would promise to give it back. So I said, 'Well, I guess so. Just be sure you return it, because that's my hat.' About a month later, I saw my friend on the street back from England, wearing my hat. I didn't approach him, because I was going to see him later that night for dinner at my place." Craig and I were rapt. The guy went on. "So I says to him, 'How's old England doing?' And he says, 'Oh, really swell.' So I go, 'Say, can I have my hat back then?' And my friend said, 'Oh, God, I'm afraid I got some bad news for you, buddy. I accidentally left it in England. I'm so sorry.' So I know my friend's got my hat the whole time. I saw it on his head that very day. See what I mean? If you got a hat, you know what it's like." I mulled this over. "Boy, that's rough. I got a nice one, too. What kind of hat was it, anyway?" Picturing a vintage Borsellino, or a dapper Panama, or maybe even a perfect tweed newsboy number. "Oh, it was just a dumb old ball cap, a red ball cap. But it was my hat, for Christ's sakes." End of story. So many questions. What was a New York barfly doing in England in the first place? It was like talking to Gogol. Richard Merkin. Yesterday, David McDermott took me over to Richard Merkin's apartment on 84th and West End Avenue, 3 p.m. David calls him Buddy Business because he's so good at making a living. A Merkin is a pubic wig, of course. Sprawling, cluttered pre-war pad, his studio in the living room, where he was working at a large panel with his charcoals and his gouache. He was dressed in shorts and a striped French sailor's jersey, just like a real artist. He cordially offered me coffee and a Turkish cigarette with Crazy Cat printed on the paper. "I have them made for me," he explained. We talked for 3 hours. He spent a summer in London living with pop artist Joe Tilson and becoming close to Peter Blake and Ron Kitaj, which influenced him radically. Now he shows at the very chic Dintenfass Gallery and teaches at RISD. His paintings go for about $2,000 and have words sprinkled throughout them. So interesting and intelligent and bawdy. He showed me bits of his extensive erotica collection, some framed and hanging for all the world to see. He was listening to British crooner Al Boley, and we discussed jazz and lyricists and William Seabrook and Burroughs and Richard Lindner and on and on. I'd brought my summer workbook to show him and gave him a collage, which had a shard of Dayglo pink nylon, a Clark Bar wrapper, a photo of a dime, and a remnant of graph paper. He suggested I produce large paintings and distort my drawings more than I do. He gave me some flyers and a poster of him sitting in the Coney Island Wax Museum, reading the paper with a bowler hat on,